Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Mike Kegley. Tonight, we're going to have on Mason Williams, the senior writer from thehoosier.com. He is going to talk to us a little bit about the Indiana Hoosiers and get us ready for a Hoosier team that is peaking. Illinois and Indiana are not having the greatest of seasons, but both teams are playing better football now. Should be an exciting game this Saturday, and Indiana needs all three of their games to be victories to make it to 6-6 and have the opportunity to go bowling. Illinois can afford to lose a game, but with Iowa on the road and Northwestern at home, it would be really nice to get the win against Indiana this Friday. We'll be back in a minute to talk with Mason Williams about the Indiana Hoosiers. Are you looking to grow your business? Do that with the Illini Guys Radio Network by broadcasting on the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular. We have over 20 stations, including stations in Chicago, St. Louis, Champaign, Decatur, Springfield, Bloomington, the Quad Cities, Rockford, Peoria, Marion, Quincy, and Jacksonville, amongst others. You can reach over 11 million people in the state of Illinois by partnering with us. Send me an email, mike@IlliniGuys.com. And let's find a way that we can build your business together. And as promised, this is Mike Kegley, and I'm back with Mason Williams. He is the senior writer at thehoosier.com, and he's been kind enough to come and talk to us a little bit about the Indiana Hoosier football team, which unfortunately for Illini fans actually looks like they're playing pretty good brand of football right now and makes this game that Illinois has to have to march towards going to a bowl makes it much more tenuous when Indiana's playing well. Mason, how'd they look this weekend?
Indiana kind of, as you mentioned, has turned a little bit of a corner here throughout the middle of the season. There was kind of a point after maybe about a couple of weeks ago now where there was kind of a loss to Rutgers at home, and Indiana was kind of very demoralized, and the performance didn't look very promising, didn't inspire a whole lot of hope at all. And Indiana could have really kind of mailed in the season at that point. And really out of that performance, instead of continuing down that trend, they've played two of their better games of the season so far, a loss at Penn State where they held it pretty close with the then 10th ranked Nittany Lions. And then last week actually coming in to coming back to their home stadium and beating Wisconsin, who was on their way to Bloomington. So I think we've kind of seen a little bit of a tone shift. We've seen a team that I think a lot of people thought was kind of checked out on this year has remained to be bought in, and they finally got a result. They finally got some game day success to show for it on Saturday against Wisconsin. But in truth, Indiana's been playing with their back against the wall for a couple weeks now because they were 2-6 heading into that game against Wisconsin. So I think it's curious to see just how much further this Indiana team can kind of go surviving with this mindset. They've called it playoff mode that they've been in now for a couple of weeks, because they know that kind of in Illinois' boat, if they want to play another game beyond the 12, if they want to play into December, play into the postseason, they've got to win out as well. So they're 3-6 now as well. So yeah. Indiana's played some of their better football going down the stretch here, but they're going to need to carry it over into Champaign and then further beyond that if they want to play in the postseason. But yeah, no, definitely a different football team than we've seen in the first couple months of the season over the last couple weeks for Indiana.
Yeah, and that was one thing I do find is Greg Schiano just doesn't get much respect as a coach. You know, yeah. he built that Rutgers program up beyond what I think anybody thought was humanly possible, then made that mistake of going to the clarion call of the NFL and has had to rebuild it. And now he's back at Rutgers, of which he knows how to win at that school. And, yes. You know, again, I don't think there's any sin in losing to a Schiano-coached Rutgers team, but others may feel differently.
Especially not this year, right? We've seen that Rutgers team, especially as you mentioned over the past couple of years, really build some positive momentum, and Schiano and Rutgers just seems like it's a perfect pairing. I think where the disconnect came from with Indiana fans is that typically the kind of the wooden spoon of the Big Ten East is typically passed around between Indiana and Rutgers, and then I guess in the last couple of years, Michigan State as well, but that Rutgers has kind of been the barometer for this Indiana team. And now they've beaten Indiana three straight times, all under Schiano now, but still Indiana fans, I think, especially with the way that game happened, they were never really in it a couple weeks ago at home. It was homecoming. A lot was supposed to be going Indiana's way. And there was kind of a sense where it's like, well, if it's not now, when? And they've kind of just completely, that game looks months ago, not 2 weeks ago. You know what I mean? It's just Indiana's playing much better, much more cohesive and complementary football. And we've seen some results come from it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next. But I agree with you, especially to Schiano at Rutgers. That team is a program on the rise for sure as well.
So, you know, Illinois fans want to know what to expect from that Indiana offense. You know, Illinois is now playing against somebody from the East. So you expect mm-hmm. them to score more than the West, which isn't really saying much. So what can the Illini expect? What, you know, like let's start boiling down. Let's start at the offensive line. How good is this Indiana offensive line?
The offensive line has been kind of the focal point of the offense. It seems like improvement wise throughout the year, over the last couple of years, it was one of the worst units, if not the worst unit across the entire conference, not just the East Division. So Indiana did something about it in the offseason. After last year, they made a midseason change, firing Darren Hiller, who was the O-line coach at the time. Had Rod Carey, who's now this year, and we'll get into this later, who's now the offensive coordinator this year, step into the interim role from a defensive quality control coach position because he played O-line at Indiana and was kind of just an interim fix, kind of just stopped the bleeding a little bit, but Indiana wanted to make sure and go out and really try to address that in the offseason. Brought in Bob Bostad from Wisconsin to overtake the position coach role. And the pass blocking has been much better this year. Indiana's done a lot better keeping their quarterbacks healthy and keeping their quarterbacks clean in the pocket. The running game is still where Indiana has its issues and kind of developing consistent holes for the running backs to run through. They've got a talented running back room and they've got some veteran guys on the offensive line, but schematically, some of the things still don't click all the time. It kind of clicked in the first half against Wisconsin, and then kind of in the second half, the defensive front seven for the Badgers really kind of wore down Indiana. They didn't really have much at all that they could do in that second half. Indiana only totaled like 30, 40 yards of offense in that entire second half. So really, it was a testament to the defense that they came out with that victory. But the offensive line for Indiana, it's been up and down throughout the year, but it's been much more gradual and progressive growth than we've seen in years past. And that's kind of been a goal for Indiana this year to essentially clear the deck, set a foundation and build forward on that. They've got some O-line recruits coming in as well that they're hoping can help kind of maintain this momentum they're building. But the offensive line is better. It's still not up amongst the elites of the conference by any means, but definitely better than we've seen in the past.
What can we expect looking at the quarterback position for the Hoosiers?
You'll see Brendan Sorsby, most likely, who's been dealing with kind of a little bit of a shoulder injury. He told us after the Wisconsin win that he didn't get really practiced much leading up to that game. But Indiana, the quarterback situation was a doozy all year. They didn't name a starter throughout the fall after not naming a starter throughout the spring. kind of rotated quarterbacks for a couple weeks and then decided on Taven Jackson. Well, Taven Jackson then was not benched, but they just Indiana just wanted to find some rotation, I think, again, get a little bit more further game evaluation for both he and Brendan Sorsby, especially when Walt Bell was fired, who was the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. Rod Carey stepped into that role this year on a full-time basis now. So I think he and both the Indiana staff really just wanted more game evaluation. You've got two redshirt freshmen that were battling for the position with next to no game experience on either side, for either of them, excuse me. So Indiana decided on Brendan Sorsby after the Michigan game, and he's really shown some impressive growth for Indiana this year over these past 3 weeks now. He's a tough guy. He's not really afraid to lower his shoulder, which is kind of how he got his shoulder messed up a little bit right now, but not afraid to lower his shoulder, take some hits. And he's a gamer a little bit. He's a little bit inaccurate sometimes, and he'll make a couple decisions sometimes that don't always seem like they click a little bit, but Sorsby is the guy for Indiana right now. And he's who Illinois fans should expect at quarterback.
Now, when he's dropping back to pass, you know, who are his favorite targets and what can Illinois expect? Is there a blazer, you know, a burner out there in the wide receiver core? Is there a tight end that's one that he uses as a safety blanket?
The receiving core has been up and down this year, kind of with the utilization of the quarterbacks being kind of flip-flopped and there being so much rotation. We really saw, I think, the whole offense as a cohesive unit, but specifically the wide receivers, you could tell they look like a group that hasn't had a quarterback one to practice with throughout the week and really build that rotation build that repetition with one guy at the head signal caller position. But now that Sorsby's kind of taken over that role and found some more comfort in that, Indiana's wide receivers have really started to come into their own this year. The guy this year that has really started to break out, especially over the past couple of weeks, is a guy named Donovan McCauley, who was actually a quarterback recruit for Indiana, started a couple games 2 years ago, and then last year made the switch to wide receiver. He's a big 6'5" dynamic guy who really has just been waiting for his feet to kind of come under him at the position, because he's got the hands, he's got the size, the catch radius, everything that you would want in a wide receiver. And he's really kind of come into his own over these past couple of weeks. Sorsby has kind of made him his favorite target. Cam Kampert has been dealing with some injury issues, but if he's available this upcoming weekend against Illinois, then he's kind of a guy that's kind of tabbed into the wide receiver one role by default. He was a really breakout star for Indiana last year before he went down with a torn ACL. So he's been dealing with some injury stuff, nagging him here and there this year. And then a guy like DeKeese Carter, who can play the slot on the inside. Omar Cooper has been a redshirt freshman who's kind of burst onto the scene a little bit this year, but he just left the Wisconsin game with an injury, so I'm not sure if he'll be available as well. And then Jalen Lucas, who lines up in the backfield a lot, kind of can go outside a little bit into the slot. He's kind of a slot receiver, running back by trade, little gadget guy, Darren Sproles type, Deuce Vaughn type player. But he's been pretty prolific in the passing game when they've used him. And that's been kind of one of the main gripes, I think, from Indiana fans this year, is that there isn't enough usage of Jalen Lucas in that offense yet. But when it comes to just pure wide receivers, you're going to see a lot of Donovan McCauley, number one, on the outside. DeKeese Carter, number four. Omar Cooper, if he's available, number three. And then kind of the tight ends, it's more of a safety blanket. They're more of an extension of the run game in this offense. But every now and then they'll break out for, you know, a route in the flat or something like that. Bradley Archer, Trey Walker, a couple of those guys. But when it comes down to the skill position players, it's typically Sorsby looking for the wide outs on the outside.
Yep. And when you go back to the running back position, who is going to be the guy who's there to grind it out for the Hoosiers?
A guy named Josh Henderson, who transferred from UNC a couple years ago. He's kind of the mix. Indiana's got a kind of three or four guys that they like to use in rotation. But Josh Henderson, I think if you were to look at a depth chart, would be listed as the number one running back. He's a guy that's right around 6 foot mark. He's got size. He's got speed. He can run through guys. He can run around guys. And he's kind of just the mix of this offense. He can get involved in the passing game a little bit. But Indiana will use a lot of dual back sets with he and Jalen Lucas if they want kind of a an option for both, if you know what I mean. So it comes down really to Josh Henderson and Jalen Lucas. We've seen a guy named Trent Howland really start to come into his own a little bit in this offense as well. He's a big bruiser. He actually actually moved over to linebacker at the end of last year when linebacker depth was thin because of his frame and his propensity for playing a position in high school. But we've seen him get involved as well as he's kind of come into his own, started to really earn some more carries from this Indiana offense. But the run game's effectiveness comes back down to the offensive line. And when the offensive line is able to open up those holes for these running backs, they've been a lot more dangerous and a lot more dynamic than Indiana, than I think a lot of people would expect Indiana running backs to be. But it's been a while since we've actually seen a rushing touchdown from an Indiana quarterback. Indiana likes to run these option style keepers for Sorsby or Jackson, whoever it be. And they're typically, if they're the rushing touchdown as of late, they're the ones that are getting into the end zone. So the running game is kind of a supplement to the passing game for this Indiana offense, I would say. Of course, now that I say that, Indiana's probably going to try and run the ball right down the Illinois throat, but they like to keep a defense on their toes, and sometimes the play calling is there, sometimes it isn't. Sometimes the blocking is there, sometimes it isn't. But it comes down to a mix of Henderson and Lucas, a guy named Christian Turner, who we've not seen a lot of lately. He's been kind of dealing with some injuries this year, a Wake Forest transfer, and then Howland as well. So a lot of different guys get some reps in that backfield, but it also comes down to the running game of the quarterback too.
Yeah, and it is interesting, you know, when you look at the overall comparison of the offense, you know, Illinois in terms of points is eighth in the conference, Indiana's 12th, but there's really only not even three full points between them, you know, in terms of the average. And then in terms of defense, Illinois' defense has not been as staunch as people had hoped it would be. And Illinois is in defense in terms of points is 12th in the Big Ten. Indiana is 13th, and there's a 0.4 per game difference there. So, you know, now I will say that somehow the return of Johnny Newton sparked what Illinois fans thought they were going to have. And I'm not certain if that was the defense playing well, because they were clearly fired up having their leader back after what Illinois fans felt was, you know, it might have been a helmet to helmet. Wasn't really what Illinois fans thought was a targeting.
Right.
And so having him gone, you know, they felt like it cost them the end of the Wisconsin game and then the first half of Minnesota. So when he came back, they held the Golden Gophers to 9 points. And 69 yards in the second half. And mm-hmm. the 9 points were a field goal and a touchdown. They did not get the 2-point conversion off of Illinois offensive turnovers. So the defense played very inspired, and Illini fans are hoping that's the defense that shows up for this game. But you know, I don't know that that's a fair thing to ask the defense to do. You know, you just don't play that way. Battle of two offenses that are okay, but I don't think there's a ton of people that are, you know, stealing the signals from either of these teams right now.
I think you could probably brand this one as a lot to be left desired, right? Yes. Specifically this Indiana team is overhauled with transfers all over the place. A lot of guys that get meaningful reps, get meaningful snaps for this Indiana team this year weren't here last year in some capacity. So I think there was a lot of uncertainty surrounding this team. And we've seen passages this year where it looks like a team that's a bunch of newcomers and guys that have not played more than, you know, a few months together versus some of these guys that have got units that have grown up together 3 or 4 years. So there's been some games where it's a head scratcher and they don't look like they belong. And then there's games like last week where they kind of put it together when they need to, and it just kind of nets out a result. But yeah, I'd agree with you. There's been a lot to be desired for, I would say, both of these units going into this game. And I think especially with the object of the postseason still technically being on the table for both of these teams, I think that adds an interesting element to it where not really a whole lot would be riding on the line of this game otherwise. And that kind of makes it to where it's a very hyper important game to a very small facet, a very small factor of people in the realm of the sport. But this is it's an important game for both sides, and we'll see. Something's got to give, right? When push comes to shove, one of them's going to prevail over the other. So we'll see which one does.
Yeah, that's the exciting part of college sports, who's going to respond and who's not. We'll be right back in just a minute, folks. We'll have a couple messages, and then we will talk special teams with Mason Williams. Whether you live in Champaign or Chicago, halfway across this great nation, or halfway across the planet, IlliniGuys.com keeps you in the know. Whether it's game results or what's going on in recruiting behind the scenes, IlliniGuys.com covers it. Only $99 a year, and you get a free 7-day trial to kick the tires. Go to IlliniGuys.com, click the register button that's right next to the 7-day free trial, and we'd love to have you as a subscriber. IlliniGuys.com. And as promised, we are back. This is Mike Kegley with Mason Williams. We're going to talk about the Indiana versus Illinois preview. And of course, this game is kind of rare that both teams have a pathway to a bowl. If Indiana is to keep marching towards a bowl, it will be very hard for Illinois. We'll force them into defeating Iowa on the road and Northwestern at home. If Illinois was to win today, it would pretty much stop Indiana's journey. And then Illinois has to win one of two, which is considerably less stressful, but hardly guaranteed in the Big Ten, the way things have been going this year. Mason, when we look at the special teams, let's start off with kicking game. How has that went for the Hoosiers this season?
It's been kind of tough to get a gauge on because Indiana's offense leading up really until these past couple weeks hasn't been in a whole lot of situations where there's points to be scored. And when they're getting into field goal range or something of the like, they're down way too many points as of late to really take the field goal and feel good about it when they would need to really go for it if they're going to chase a result. So Indiana came into this year with a kicking battle. That was one of the other really big position battles this year. They've got a junior on the roster who has won the position battle named Chris Freeman. And they had a 5-star All-American kicker come in, Nico Radicic, who kind of pushed for the position throughout the fall. But we've seen Chris Freeman do all the kicking this year. And Chris has had an up and down year a little bit, but he just had his biggest kick of his career, let alone the season, last week against Wisconsin. There was a play about a minute left in the game, and Indiana lined up for a 51-yard field goal with a 3-point lead against Wisconsin. And the risk was Wisconsin was out of timeouts, but if Chris would have missed this kick, and he'd already missed one in the game, if he would have missed this kick, then Wisconsin was going to take the ball over at about the 40-yard line and only need a field goal to tie the game. So they trusted Chris, and Chris stepped up and drilled a 50-yarder, which was 8 yards further than his career long. He had missed from, I think, around 35 to 40 yards earlier in the game, but he'd already made one. And now he's got the confidence in him, I would assume. Kind of hard to, make a game sealing kick like that and not have confidence in him. But Freeman is a guy who won the kicking battle this year. It's been a bit of an up and down year for him, and the offense hasn't necessarily put them in a ton of positions to score points. But Freeman's the kicker, and he's also the kickoff specialist. And there's not been a whole lot of issues on the kickoff specialist part of it by any means. But the kicking game has left some to be desired. But big kick for him last week. So I'd imagine that he's probably, I don't know if the term is playing his best football, right? Because he's just the kicker in all reality, but he's probably riding as high as he has been all year heading into this one.
And from a punting standpoint, how is Indiana set up there?
I think everybody knows Torrey Taylor at Iowa, correct? You would be doing yourself a disservice, especially with the amount of punting that Indiana and Big Ten teams do, if you didn't know James Evans' name. He was a guy that coming in a couple of years ago, he's an Australian guy. He had never really played much organized football at all. One of those rugby guys that Indiana converted over. And his first year was not great punting the football. at all. And then last year, granted, he got a ton of opportunities to do so last year, but he built some really nice consistency last year and has been an actual weapon for Indiana's special teams unit. And this year, it's really started to come through, especially over these last couple of games. There was a punt late in the fourth quarter where Indiana took over the ball deep in their own territory, and they needed Evans to kind of flip the field from his own end zone. And not only did he do that, but he lined Wisconsin up at their own 30. And Wisconsin's offense, who was struggling all day to move the ball against the Indiana defense, really had no answer for it. But even so, a couple years ago, that punt may have only gone to the 50-yard line. That punt may have not got past midfield. And he's had a couple shanks this year for sure. But Evans has built some consistency and has turned into a real weapon for the Indiana offense. So he's the guy on the punt team that I think after week one, he was one of the Rays, Ray guy eight, whatever the punting weekly award was.
Right.
He had that. And then this year, he's kind of just become a weapon for the Indiana special teams unit.
And then from a return standpoint, Indiana have any return guys that have been threatening to the other side?
The return game is where the special teams unit has been really lackluster this year, actually. There was a general consensus last year when Jalen Lucas – By some way of a minor miracle in the era of the NIL and the transfer portal and everything, where he was an All-American kick returner for Indiana last year, and then they retained him for his services this year. And last year he only really returned kicks, but this year he was put on to punt returns, and he muffed a couple in some pretty crucial spots, and he's no longer on punt returns, but still back there on kick returns, and he's good for about one good kick return a game. But the punt return, there's been a carousel of returners this year, because there was a game earlier this year where Lucas was back to return one and he muffed it, and then they went to their second guy and he went back there and he muffed one, and now they're on a third guy who's the wide receiver, DeKeese Carter. They didn't have any issues with it against Wisconsin, but the return game has been kind of up and down for this team this year. And I do want to say, it's been the special teams has been a pretty contentious point of conversation throughout the year, because they've made some really boneheaded mistakes and been responsible for a really just an alarming amount of penalties. They've been kind of a point of, special teams shouldn't have that much impact on a game, and it shouldn't really be that noticeable to the naked eye. But there's been a couple of games this year where really it's been like an actual problem that has contended that has really hurt Indiana and been noticeable in the result later on in the game. So it's been kind of undisciplined unit from time to time, but they'd had no issues against Wisconsin, and Indiana will surely be hoping to keep that up against Illinois. But the return game has been kind of lackluster this year, certainly not what it was last year with Lucas.
Yeah, well, that's an area Illinois kind of broke out a little bit on the returns the last few weeks. It was not a weakness, but they started to really play well there. And of course, Robertson's done a good job as a punter. He has done a very nice job on getting the ball down to inside the 20. Again, another Australian guy, 30 years old, can't throw a lot at him that he hasn't seen already, because he'll be getting his senior citizen card and getting, meals at 5 p.m. But he certainly has done a nice job, although he did have one play where I think he just kind of got lost in a moment and got a punt blocked when there was really no reason. He just kind of took a little too long to get rid of the ball. The special team seems like Illinois might have a slight advantage on the special teams here. We'll be right back after this, and we will talk about the defense, and we will see if we can get a prediction from Mason as to what he thinks is going to happen. Make sure you subscribe to the full family of Illini Guys podcasts, starting out with Eye on the Illini. That's where you can listen to myself, Brad, Ked, Matt, and others talk about the recent Illini events that are in the news. Sturdy for 30 is Brad's award-winning podcast, where you can hear 20 years of people that he's made contact with to talk about all things Illini, and Ked's Recruiting Roundup, where he talks to players, coaches, and parents about what it's like to be recruited. Make sure you subscribe to all of those so you're always in the know. And as promised, we're going to return here for the last segment of the show. Mike Kegley and Mason Williams, who's the senior writer from thehoosier.com. So please go ahead and check his stuff out. Fantastic coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers. I know they're one of the teams that Illini fans love to hate, but if you want to be up to date with our opponent, that's where you need to go.
Hey, real quick, what's your take on that? Is it a rivalry, Indiana-Illinois? I know it was a big point during basketball season last year.
It is in basketball. I think the Indiana fans, I'll be real honest with you, be real brutal with you. Indiana fans think it's 1987. They're not a blue blood anymore. They used to be when I was a young man. I'm 56 now. When I was a young man, Bobby Knight was there.
Yeah.
Up until about like 93 or something. Indiana was up there with, UCLA and North Carolina. Duke was ascending to that status. But you have to remember, Bob Knight, did everything he could to get Lou Henson put on probation because he did not like, you could take a look at the 80s when Illinois took over having the best defense in the league.
Yeah.
Bob Knight didn't like that. He did not like that at all. And of course, you had the Flying Illini, and Illinois got put on probation with the Bruce Pearl spliced tape and the first line of the NCAA, infraction notice was, although there's no proof of any of the infractions, the number of the infractions, the number of accusations leads us to do the lack of institutional control. Something like that nowadays would just result in a lawsuit that the NCAA would lose, very similar to what happened at Kansas, and nothing would happen. As somebody who was old enough to know a lot of those Illini basketball players, there was a lot of stuff in place, and I paid for beer for people who, if they were making as much money as the rest of the Big Ten thought, they should have been paying for my beer.
Right.
But, it is what it is. But Illinois and Indiana in basketball, I think that's a rivalry. Indiana fans have some reason to not like it. And I think a lot of that goes with the end of the Weber era and the John Gross era. Illinois wasn't very good. But if you wake up and smell the coffee, there's a few years Indiana had some pretty lean years as well. I do think in the Big Ten, you've got Illinois, Michigan State, Indiana, Michigan State, Illinois, and those two and those two teams. I think that those triumvirate are probably the big three in the Big Ten for basketball.
Yeah, but I would say I grew up. I was born in 2001, so my spectrum of Indiana basketball is very different than a lot of the people that I'm writing to, a lot of the people that are tuning in religiously to the program. So I'm always curious to get a take on it from different generations of it, because I know what I grew up with and what some of the people that are discussing it have grown up with. So I'm always curious on that. So I appreciate the insight more than anything.
What's your feeling?
I would agree with you that in basketball, it's definitely contentious. And even if Indiana fans don't like to say it's a rivalry, the way that they behave and the way that they speak to one another online or in person, whatever, it's a rivalry. Whether it's not the most contentious rivalry by any means, when you're looking at the likes of an Indiana Purdue or something along those lines, but it's not to that level, but it doesn't have to be considered a rival. You know what I mean? So I would say that there's kind of a sense where Indiana fans are proud to be like, yeah, we beat Illinois. And so if you're more proud of that one, then why would you not just admit like, yeah, it's a rivalry. We like to beat them, or we don't like to lose to them either way. So I would say that I've grown up in a time where I feel like it's contentious, and maybe that's because of it being more readily available to see online or whatever. But I'm always just curious of how it's evolved over generations, because you see like the Eric Gordon shove clip or something like that. Like that's the clip. That's the basis of it that I've grown up around. And the year when Indiana was number one in the country and they go and lose at Illinois.
Yeah. Tyler Griffey's layup. Yeah.
Right. So that's the basis of knowledge that I have around it, that because that's what I grew up with. So yeah, I would assume it's a rivalry football wise. I don't think it's anything
nobody cares. They both are at
nobody
the
cares.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think it's anything further than the stadiums being named the same. Right. And because they're not in the same division, anything like that. So, but basketball wise, I would say, yeah, it's at least not your everyday matchup. Like, oh, they play Illinois on Wednesday night. Like, oh no, Indiana, Illinois on Wednesday night. Like that should be a good game. It's always a good game. So I would assume just in the most basic sense, yes, it's a rivalry.
Yeah, we go back to, you know, you go back to the 70s and 80s and Henson and Bobby Knight had some blowouts. I mean, those guys went at each other hard and you had the opposite. You know, Henson would rarely swear.
Mm-hmm.
And you had Bobby Knight, who was the total opposite.
And, the sailor. So,
yep, exactly. And so there were, you know, contrasting styles. And then you go back to the game when Nick Anderson hit the three pointer to win the game at the very end. Was a huge game that you know stuck in Bobby's craw. And they went back and forth. I mean, every game was bitterly contested. And the two teams generally gave each other their best games. So. If you had tickets to one of those games, it was fantastic entertainment. So, you know, and then obviously in the modern era, you know, you go after the third year of Weber, Illinois goes into a black hole. And then it took Underwood 2 years to flush the stuff out of the system. Because, again, Underwood got here right before the transfer portal came into place. And you can see how he uses the portal. If the transfer portal had been to place when he got here, he would have turned it around Illinois in about a season.
Right.
But he had to flush through, you know, a roster of the John Gross and some of that miasma of mediocrity that was kind of there. And now, again, now he has to win in the postseason. And as an old guy, that's the exact same thing that Lou Henson had to go through. He had to bring Illinois back and it took a while to win in the tourney. And, mm-hmm. and he had to listen to, oh, he can't win in the tourney before he got that done. And Underwood is going through the same thing. So, you know, we're hoping that this is the year. And I probably should have mentioned Purdue, the masters of the grab and hold, that, you know, they, I don't know why they don't, because Painter's a fantastic coach.
Right.
I don't know why he hasn't figured out that if I teach him to grab and hold all year, it doesn't get called in the Big Ten because who knows why. And then I get into the tournament and the grab and hold gets called and we lose in the first round.
To the 16s and the 15s and everything. Yeah,
maybe
the double digits.
Yeah, maybe we stop grabbing and holding all year so that we're ready for the tournament.
Yeah.
But and again, Matt Painter, you know, could outcoach me blindfolded, tied up, you know, in the trunk of a car. So there's no, but it just seems shocking to me that a guy with his talent level hasn't thought like, hey, maybe we coach something that's sustainable in the tournament.
But yeah. Going back to the point about the IU fan base specifically, I think that's where a lot of the allure and a lot of the affection from a guy like Mike Woodson comes from, right? Being an Indiana player, played under Bob Knight. Indiana fans love Bob Knight for better or for worse, for whatever he was, you know, everything that came with him, he was Indiana's guy. So, and obviously it's been an emotional time with him passing just recently around the program and everything, but having a guy like Woodson at the helm, I think Indiana fans have really attached themselves to him because he's the guy that's, Indiana was nowhere near the point that Tom Crean took over with when he took over from Archie Miller, but Archie was never really an Indiana guy. He was maybe the right guy for the job when he was hired, but then afterwards it just never panned out. So with him now out of the fold and Indiana back with Woodson and this immediate success Woodson has had in kind of laying his own base layer and now starting to build off of it. Now it's getting back to him where it's like, okay, now what's he going to do next? Now he's got this year is his first real test, because he's got no Trace Jackson Davis. He's got no Race Thompson. He's got no program stalwarts, really, outside of Xavier Johnson, who's really only come in since him. So, and I know we're not talking basketball here, but
well,
still.
We are, which is fun. Who cares? It's
right.
Basketball season's about to start. So, you know, that's
fine. So I would assume that's where some of it comes from too. Now having Woodson on staff and you know, going back to maybe some of those older matchups between Indiana and Illinois when Woodson was a player, some of that kind of stuff, it all gets rekindled. But he's a good guy for a fan base that is used to having all their success 30 years ago. So, and kind of being the guy that they can hopefully point them to establish a new era of success for Indiana. But I think that's where part of that comes from too.
Yeah. I'm not an Indiana basketball fan, but when Illinois and Indiana are both good, the Big Ten's much more fun to watch.
Oh, yes,
and
absolutely.
If you can throw in a healthy Michigan and a healthy Michigan State, it turns into exciting basketball. I just hope that the Big Ten figures out that you've got to start officiating the games.
It's called March.
Yes, you don't need the WWE stuff. Because then your teams go in and they try that in the tournament, it doesn't work. And you've already, you know, you're 10 minutes into the first half of your game, your first game in the tournament, and the other team's already in the double bonus. And right. You go into halftime down, you know, 14 points and then you got to try to play a whole different style of defense with the other team with a nice, you know, head start on you.
Well, you're playing so slow, right? Because that's the pace of the game too in the conference, and then you're getting run around by ACC teams and SEC teams that have been running and gunning all season long. So I know Indiana really struggled last year to keep up with Miami's speed in the conference or in the tournament. And obviously, Miami ended up going up to all the way to the Final Four, but you look at that as like Miami had speed all over the court. They could have ran circles around most of the Indiana guards, especially with Xavier Johnson out. And Johnson, the quickest guard Indiana has, is an ACC guy from Pitt. So, you know, that's where I think a lot of it comes from, too. You play such a slowed down brand of basketball, tackle basketball almost, where no fouls are called. And then you get to the tournament where not only is the whistle much more strict and much more conducive of what actual basketball is, but it's much more quick. It's much quicker. And all of a sudden, you've got nine Big Ten teams and none of them are in the Elite Eight as it was a couple of years ago or something like that. So you've got no real shot at the title, and that's how you end up with what Michigan State before I was born in 2000 being the last NCAA title. So that's where that comes from too, I think.
Yeah, I think there's a lot. And if I had $5 for every time I talked to a recruit at an EYBL function where they explain to me how an SEC or an ACC or a Pac-12 coach talked about, do you want to play where you can get punched, kicked, elbowed, or do you want to play where you can show your skills to the guys in the NBA so they can see how good you are? It's become a recruiting pitch for coaches that you're going to get reffed like that. And, you know, do you really want some guy? And you know, Io getting punched in the nose was something that was used by SEC coaches numerous times against Big Ten schools. Do you want to go there and get punched in the face? They didn't even call, they didn't even call a foul. You know, they had to stop the game, call a timeout to get anything called, you know, and these kids aren't dumb. You know, they're right. Like, you know, I think I would rather score 30 points and not have to worry about getting beat up, you know?
Yeah. So,
I tell you what, we will take a break, folks, and then we will talk defense because we had our basketball interlude because we're excited. Illinois starts on Monday night. Indiana starts on Tuesday night. And it's the greatest month of the year. November means that we have a boatload of basketball games and a boatload of football games to cover. We'll be right back in a minute. Do that with the Illini Guys Radio Network by broadcasting on the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular. We have over 20 stations, including stations in Chicago, St. Louis, Champaign, Decatur, Springfield, Bloomington, the Quad Cities, Rockford, Peoria, Marion, Quincy, and Jacksonville, amongst others. You can reach over 11 million people in the state of Illinois by partnering with us. Send me an email, mike@IlliniGuys.com. And let's find a way that we can build your business together. Okay, so we're back, and we're going to actually talk defense this time. We did our basketball interlude. Mason sucked me into the basketball world. I can't help it. I love Big Ten football. I love Big Ten basketball, and it's so exciting with opening tip-off less than 24 hours away for Illini fans, less than 48 hours away for Indiana fans. We got carried away.
Sorry yeah, about it.
It happens. It's part of the job. So the Indiana defense, last year, Illinois came in there, thought they were going to win. Got to be honest with you, it looked like they had a touchdown pass that I disagree with the call. But nonetheless, Indiana's defense had some outstanding linebacking last year in particular. What are we looking for on this defensive line? Any standouts? Because Illinois' offensive line starting to play a little bit better. But it's not the Illinois offensive line that was there last year.
First of all, unbiased journalist, you are absolutely right. There was a touchdown that was taken off the board in that game. And that Indiana offense, I still to this day don't have an answer for you for how for 75 yards of offense that entire half put together 75 yards in 2 minutes. Yeah. It was one of the weirdest games I remember covering last year. But unbiased journalist, absolutely a touchdown taken off the board. I don't understand the call either. Defensively, for this year, for Indiana, the front line has been really the front seven. It's been a point of emphasis. It's specifically with the defensive line. They've talked about it, whether it was all off season or now a few weeks into the season, now coming up on the home stretch of it, that this defensive line for Indiana on purpose looks much more physical, much stronger, much more imposing of a unit just as a whole. Kind of the airport test, right? You walk past these guys in the airport, and you see like, oh, these guys play. These guys have something to them. You know, these guys are athletes. So, when you come down to names and guys that have been really impactful for this Indiana line, you have to start with Andre Carter, who transferred from Western Michigan last year, was an All-MAC selection last year, and has kind of been just a massive disruptor. He starts off as an edge rusher, but Indiana likes to move him around a ton as his snap counts have kind of increased throughout the weeks. So you can't miss him. He's a big, physical, imposing figure, probably the best player on this Indiana D line. He's a fifth or sixth year guy. I can't keep it straight with all the COVID years and stuff still being intact, but yeah. He's a senior guy. He's been around college football a lot, and he's spent a lot of time in opposing backfields this year. So he's kind of the straw that stirs the drink on the defensive line, but they've got a lot of different playmakers. Indiana likes to run their 4-2-5 and really will sometimes only go one or two down linemen, and we'll bring some linebackers off the edge as well, whether it's a guy like Miles Jackson or a guy like Anthony Carr, who transferred from Oregon last year. Some of these guys that have just been, you know, kind of coming off the edge, Philip Bleedy, Linnell Carr up the middle at the nose tackle position. They're some of the guys to watch out for, but when it comes down to the main disruptor, the guy that will probably be circled on the offensive line coach's play sheet or a scouting report this week is we need to know where he is and make sure he doesn't get to the quarterback, it's Andre Carter.
Yep. And then linebacking, how is there any standouts there?
Linebacking, I think, as you alluded to in last year's matchup between these two teams, linebacking is kind of where Tom Allen-led defenses have really made their money. It's year after year, it seems like there's always at least one guy for the Indiana defense at the linebacker position that is kind of the main leader for the team, the instigator to everything. And this year, it's Aaron Casey. A couple years ago, it was Michael McFadden, and Casey's a sixth-year guy, so he's learned under guys like McFadden. Then last year, it was Cam Jones before injury. And when Jones went down, Casey kind of got elevated to that role prematurely a little bit. Prematurely for a fifth-year guy is kind of a wild thing to say, I understand. Right, right. But when a guy like Cam Jones has been so good for that long at the position, and then all of a sudden he's gone, it's going to be noticeable when he's not on the field anymore. But Aaron Casey had an entire offseason this year, his final offseason in college football, to be Indiana's lead guy on defense. And he's shown it this year. He just played his best game of the year against Wisconsin, had 9 tackles, 7 of them solo, 2 sacks, 4 tackles for loss, forced a fumble. He was everywhere. And he's just got him a nose for the football. You know what I mean? Wherever that ball goes, if it's in the first or second level of the defense or of the offense, number 44 is going to be around the ball somewhere. So they've brought in some solid transfers as well there. And I know I keep using the word transfers, but as I mentioned, I think 9 of the 11 guys during week one were transfers. So I'm not sure what that number is now, but Jacob Mangum-Ferrar was a Stanford linebacker last year. He's done some good things for Indiana this year. Linnell Carr and Miles Jackson, they're kind of the edge rushers, but they can drop back into coverage a little bit from that linebacker position. But it really comes down to Aaron Casey. When he's kind of the quarterback of this defense, he's the leader. And especially with the only other sixth-year senior in the defensive backfield being down for injury right now, we don't know if he's going to come back this year or not. And Noah Pierre, it's Aaron Casey's defense, and he is the leader of this entire unit, probably the leader of the entire team.
Yep. And then DBs, how's the defensive backfield?
They probably played their best game of the year last week, too, against Wisconsin. This year they came in, and almost all of the snaps have been from new guys or from transfers in that kind of fashion, whether it's younger guys coming in through recruiting and really just getting their first taste of meaningful football this year, whether it's a sophomore or a redshirt freshman, something along those lines, or some transfers. But they've kind of come together as a cohesive unit to really play some of their better football down the line. They got beat down the stretch of the Penn State game over the top. And typically if the breakdowns come for this team, it comes over the top of the safeties beyond the second level. They kind of got the tops taken off of them multiple times last year. And then this year, Maryland did it multiple times. Penn State did it when it mattered most. But last week against Wisconsin, played their best game as a unit, really. And now the backup quarterback for Wisconsin, I'm not sure was maybe the best guy to give Wisconsin a chance to win by any means. But Indiana took advantage of that, and they played really well. They limited the Wisconsin passing game to being largely ineffective for most of the game. So it comes down to, for that unit, being able to really play a full 60 minutes and not break down, because there have been times, like I mentioned earlier, where they look like a group of guys that are kind of just thrown together from the transfer portal and from recruiting classes that haven't had a whole lot of time together on the field, maybe aren't aware of what all is going on and everybody's responsibilities, and it gets caught out at the worst time. So that hasn't happened in the last couple of weeks with the amount of frequency that it used to, but it's still a concern for this Indiana defense. And it was one of the bigger question marks coming into the year, how well they were going to play. So if there's a time to build momentum, it's now, and they played some of their best football last week. So the defensive back group is one to monitor as well, but especially against the Illinois wide receivers. And I know you mentioned some stuff about some uncertainty with the quarterback possibly. I think it's always something that I'm keeping an eye on each week with this team. So they've got my eye of interest as well.
Yeah. And it is hard, you know, again, Illinois, you know, they fell victim once Johnny Newton was out to what happened with Wisconsin, and the backup quarterback was horrible for most of the first half, had one good drive when a prevent defense prevented a zero scores in the first half. And then in the fourth quarter, when Johnny Newton was out of the game, they went absolutely crazy. And then of course, John Paddock for Illinois went 3 for 3, came in on 4th and 11 with limited time left on the clock, and 3 for 3, threw for 85 yards and a touchdown, and had a 4.45 quarterback rating from PFF. So that was awesome. So the Illini looked good there. If we can extrapolate that out through a whole game, he could have well over 1,000 yards passing. so I'm not certain that's going to happen though. So let's get to the skinny of this. What are you guessing if you had to put a score on this Saturday's game in Memorial Stadium in Champaign?
Champaign. I think I saw the opening line opened at right around 5.5 points. Vegas predicts it's going to be close. I think S&P Plus thinks it's a little bit more weighted towards Illinois. Indiana right now, this is where last week really kind of throws a wrench into things, because I think even after a game like Penn State, where we've seen Indiana kind of play a tough top team on the road, close and really not followed up with a performance that would suggest there's momentum built. But then they did that this week, and it's kind of something India has not really done a whole lot of in recent memory, especially over the last few seasons. It's been kind of ones to forget, and Indiana still has something this year to play for all of a sudden. So the locker room is locked in. I think they're bought into what Tom Allen and the staff is still playing for. They've got this playoff mentality that I mentioned. So I think it's going to be close just by nature when you look at kind of the propensity of both the offensive and defensive units for both of these teams. It could come down to one or two plays really, you know, making a difference and being something that you circle afterwards and be like, this is where kind of the turning point was. Last week, Indiana really kept a lot of those in their own favor, and that's something I'm not generally used to seeing. I know a lot of Indiana fans generally aren't used to seeing as well. So to expect it to happen four straight weeks for this Indiana team, which is what would have to happen for them to reach the 6-win threshold to make a bowl game, I think that's asking a lot, even though it is Illinois, Michigan State, and Purdue to finish the schedule for Indiana. I'm not sure if this is the game, really, where it would be something I think that would be more favorable for Indiana if they were hosting this one versus hosting the likes of Michigan State. But getting Purdue and Illinois on the road, I think, makes it a little bit tougher. I would say Illinois right now, probably in a closer game than Vegas would predict. I'd say score-wise, I'll go like 27-24 Illinois. And I think it could be a thing where either the last team that has the ball wins the game, or we see the go ahead and eventual winning drive late in the game. But I don't think this is a game where one team really jumps out to a lead and kind of just paces the way the entire game. So I would expect this to go back and forth a little bit, but I would think Illinois probably is ultimately the one that comes out. They would keep their bowl hopes alive, and Indiana's bowl hopes would ultimately go by the wayside. But that's kind of the feeling and emotion I get preliminarily right now.
Yeah, well, we realize we're not going to hold you to it, but we certainly appreciate you coming.
And I appreciate that. So,
yeah, we appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much for sharing a few moments of your time. And we will talk to you during basketball season, and maybe we'll have even more of a debate when these two teams bang heads in the middle of the frozen wintertime.
Sounds good, man. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Whether you live in Champaign or Chicago, halfway across this great nation, or halfway across the planet, IlliniGuys.com keeps you in the know. Whether it's game results or what's going on in recruiting behind the scenes, IlliniGuys.com covers it. Only $99 a year, and you get a free 7-day trial to kick the tires. Go to IlliniGuys.com, click the register button that's right next to the 7-day free trial, and we'd love to have you as a subscriber. IlliniGuys.com. Thanks to Mason Williams, the senior writer from TheHoosier.com, for coming on and talking to us about the Indiana Hoosiers. We also had our little dalliance with the basketball season. And of course, the Illini are starting on Monday night against Eastern Illinois. Basketball season is upon us. It is going to be an exciting month of November. Can't wait to see both teams going up and down the court. It should be a ton of fun. We look forward to being there with you. This is a perfect time to subscribe to IlliniGuys.com to make sure you get all the inside scoop of what's going on with both teams. And of course, we will see you. We're going to be doing podcasts after games, whether they're football or basketball. We'll be doing preview for basketball games when we can. We'll also be doing football previews as well. There's a lot going on. Stay tuned to IlliniGuys.com. Go Illini.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
High Five Casino lets you play your favorite slot and live table games, like blackjack, with the chance to redeem for real cash prizes. High Five Casino has a giant selection of over 1,200 games, including hundreds of exclusive games only found on High Five Casino. It's always free to play, and free coins are given out every 4 hours. Ready to have your own High Five moment? Visit HighFiveCasino.com. That's high, the number five, casino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down. But when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families, where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.